Hello.
And welcome to episode 4 of
Season to Taste.
I didn't know you were going to do that. That's fine. So, last time, the randomizer selected season 25. And we agreed that our representative of that season would be Silver Nemesis. We've now watched Silver Nemesis.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I think you pointed out that we've been a little bit negative in the last couple of reviews. So I'm going to start with an unreserved positive. I love it. One of my guilty pleasures, definitely. I really enjoy Silver Nemesis.
I thought it was a lot of fun, and there were some proper laughs in there. It's actually quite a nice script. I think there's some issues with some of the execution, but there are good quality jokes, mostly which pay off.
Yeah.
It's quite an easy story to understand, and I think just comparing it with the episodes of Trial of a Time Lord we watched, it feels like a different show. It's kind of refreshed itself. And however silly it is in places, and you know, it's not the most challenging story by any means, and certainly after Remembrance and its kind of allegories about racism, mm-hmm. and the arguably the kind of satirical depth of The Happiness Patrol is quite light. But, you know, it's the 25th anniversary.
Yeah,
story.
And that's kind of my view of it. I think it almost suffers from being broadcast over 3 weeks. I think if you cut it down into a kind of movie and you'd broadcast it just on the 23rd of November, all in a wanna, for 60, 70 minutes, I think it'd be pretty well regarded, because I think it strikes just the right balance of celebration, fun, it's very accessible. There's nothing, although it has the Cybermen in and there's little throwaway lines to Mondas, I think the biggest and the most buttock-clenchingly bad continuity reference is R2 Remembrance of the Daleks, which was only about 2 months before. I think in the first episode there's that awful thing about, you built my Walkman to replace the one that the Daleks destroyed, and there's that kind of cringe-worthy moment. And then in the last episode...
The ghetto blaster he's made for Ace, which he describes as much more than just a tape deck. And I mean, I think it's important that mystery remains unrevealed.
Far more than just another tape deck. Yeah, and then in the last episode there's that, oh, just like you defeated the Daleks. But, you know, when 2 years before you're talking about continuity references going back decades, it's definite progress. I think it's quite acceptable to reference stories in the same series.
Yeah, of course it is. And I think it shows why it was a nice choice, in a way, for that season, because it does have a lot of overlap. Ace surrounded by Cybermen versus Ace surrounded by Daleks. There's a thing from Omega's time that's used to blow up a fleet,
yeah,
of those enemies. There's, you pointed out, the Cybermen getting roasted by the rockets is a bit like the Candyman getting roasted from the oven. But it's a jolly old bit of fun, and there are bad things about it. The stuff with the skinheads actually is trying to be satirical and funny, but the joke is way, way off and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, Lady Peinforte and Richard do not look like social workers.
Maybe in the 1980s that's actually what social workers looked like. Maybe they did dress like they were from the 17th century.
I know, they wasted so much money on getting the accurate costumes that they could have spent on actually supporting people. It was terrible. Bloody Tories.
Margaret Thatcher was going on about Jacobean values.
Well, Margaret Thatcher was mentioned in that, because when the Doctor's trying to track down the Queen, he says there is no alternative.
That's another thing. I think it kind of reminds me of Sharda, and I mentioned this while we were watching it in a lot of ways, because it has that same almost utter boldness that it can go anywhere and do anything. I just love that it just jumps into about 3 or 4 different time locations in the first half an episode, and it's just got the TARDIS as a kind of magic door into history, like it is in season 17. It's got Lady Peinforte and Richard wandering around Windsor High Street, like Skagra in Cambridge. It's got the Doctor running after the Queen. You know, it's got just mad things where the Doctor says, oh, I'll wander around as though I own the place, which is a very Tom Baker-ish thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that kind of sense of lightness and joy. I think what I love about the story is the real sense that the Doctor and Ace are having fun. There's real joy. And when you've had kind of let's face it, the Colin Baker years, which are rather joyless. The latter part of Peter Davison's run is pretty joyless.
But you have adults and a companion who are bounding around, not arguing with each other.
Yeah, they're just having fun. They're sitting on a kind of grassy meadow somewhere in England. The Doctor's got his bandana on. Ace is kind of chilling out with his hat on, and they're disrupting an alien space fleet with a jazz tape. I mean, I love it. I just think that's a beautiful Doctor Who image.
I do like that in that scene with the cyber leader is talking about the cyber force in space. Later we have the cyber warships, and I expect one of them just go, "Will you please stop putting cyber in front of everything? It sounds silly." Cyber, sorry. The music's terrible. I mean, there are a few bits here and there where it's quite some of the 17th century music works quite well, but the actual main action 80s music is just horrible.
In that case, it's very representative of the season, which has some of the most buttock-clenchingly bad music in the whole of the 26 years of the old series.
One thing I thought was a bit like The Ultimate Foe. I mentioned when we watched that how odd it was that the Master kind of refers to himself as an evil villain. And I thought that was a bit odd. Whereas in this, Lady Painfort actually says, "I am evil." But it works with her because she's completely nuts.
Well, it's like a moment of realisation, isn't it? She suddenly realises that Richard is actually a good man and she isn't. She's an awful woman. And I think that realisation happens just at the point when she's flipping over the edge into outright madness. Mm. And I think it's kind of that moment of clarity that tips her over the edge.
The 25-year thing, I don't really like. The whole idea that the nemesis comes close to Earth and it causes the First World War, and then it causes the Second World War, and then it causes JFK's assassination. I think I don't like that kind of thing in science fiction, where basically, in order to make a science fiction point, excuses the acts of real humans and actually almost apologises for them. You don't have Hitler say, "Oh yeah, Hitler annexed Austria because of the Nemesis game." No, he didn't. He's not allowed that excuse.
Well, my slight problem with it is that ultimately it then makes the Doctor responsible for the First and Second World Wars, which is, I'm not quite sure that the intention was that the Doctor is responsible for the two most dreadful conflicts in human history because of a slight mathematical miscalculation.
I don't think it's the best thing to put on your lead. I hadn't noticed before, and this is a ridiculous oversight on my part. We often make a joke. I say often, I mean, we have made a joke, and fans make a joke about the odd line that Ace has in The Curse of Fenric, where she says, "I hate Nazis," as if everybody else in the UK loves Nazis, and that's an odd thing, you know, that it needs pointing out. But of course, what I had never really twigged, even though it's quite obvious in retrospect, is that obviously she meets the Nazis in this story. So when she's saying she hates Nazis, it's not just, "I don't like Nazis," it's, "I've met the Nazis."
Yeah, she's talking from experience. Yeah. She's actually seen how nasty they are in practice. Although it's quite interesting, at no point during the story do they refer to themselves as Nazis.
They're just some Germans.
They're just Germans that happen to live in South America.
To be fair, yeah, they don't use the word Nazis, but I mean, De Flores talks about a new Reich, doesn't he? Or
yeah, I mean, they clearly are Nazis. They just don't self-identify as such. I think they probably prefer different names now, so
neo-Nazis.
Yeah. Differently able.
Consignia. differently fascist.
Yes.
And obviously at the end the Validium goes off so that the Doctor can use it in the Time War to destroy Gallifrey.
Well, that's one of the interesting things is that I do love, I'm saying love a lot because I do love the story. I love the Nemesis, how creepy it is when it starts to talk and it has that weird, like, almost Galadriel-esque conversation with Ace that says, I am beautiful, am I not?
Mm.
It says, I take the form of Nemesis because that's what Lady Painfort made me, but I can be anything that I'm made to be. And then there's that weird little exchange between the Doctor and the Nemesis where she says, "Will I be free?" And he has this really weird and creepy line when he says, "No, things are still imperfect."
There's that hint of the idea that is he going to go down the route of deciding that he's so powerful that actually it is his job to put everything right?
Well, Kevin Clark's idea famously was that he told Andrew Cartmell that the Seventh Doctor was God. And apparently John Nathan Turner's face was a picture, and he just paused for a few moments and said, "You can't put it in the script." So I'm quite happy with John Nathan was quite happy with people thinking the Doctor was God, as long as they didn't actually put it in the script.
There was that nice bit about the old time where, which is again a kind of callback to what they'd done in Remembrance, where Ace keeps saying "and" because she means "and what do we do?" And she says, where's Validium come from? And he says, "Oh, it was created by Omega." And she says, "and," meaning move on to the rest of the story. And he says, "Rassilon." And she says, "and." And then he kind of dodges the question, because the implication obviously is that there's a third person involved in...
And it shouldn't be here, well. Says, or something like that.
And it shouldn't be here, yeah.
But I think, I know you kind of put your finger on one of the common criticisms against the story, which is it's basically got the same resolution as Remembrance of the Daleks a couple of months previous. But I'm not sure it's as huge an issue as it's sometimes made out to be, because you get the sense between Remembrance, between this story, and probably between Greatest Show, which is coming up, of a real thematic link that they're trying to imply that the Doctor has got access to all this great power. He does know things way beyond what we've been led to believe before. And I think that almost that repetition reinforces a point that might have been a little overlooked had Remembrance not been followed up in any way. So I'm not sure it's as huge a problem as it's made out. I certainly don't think it's a huge downer on this episode. I think it still works. One thing that did interest me, because we're coming up to the 50th anniversary, is that in this silver anniversary, they ask that question, "Doctor Who? Have you never wondered?" And we're coming up to the 50th anniversary and that question suddenly cropped up again. So in that sense, it's almost prescient, isn't it, of Stephen Moffat?
Well, it's and obviously they're bouncing around in time in a very Stephen Moffat way as well.
So it's the sense that if we answer that question, the series ends. And you kind of get the sense that from all of this foreshadowing that's happened in The Wedding of River Song and all the other episodes, that Moffat's written since then, that if that question's answered, something terrible is going to happen. The silence is supposed to exist to prevent the Doctor from answering that question, or to, because they believe the universe will end when that question is asked. So there's something, there's that feel that the series and possibly more would end if you could ever find out the answer to the question. Kind of quite a creepy, weird little concept. I think it's done slightly better in Silver Nemesis.
It's 30 seconds of an episode.
Because, it's not dwelt on and kind of yelled through the rooftops. But there's definitely that sense that I think the Doctor in 1988, we knew far too much about him. And I think the production team had come in and really wanted to reintroduce some mystery to that character and hide his origins again. And that's exactly what's happening in the 50th anniversary. The Doctor's going round wiping his origins away.
Although it's a slightly odd approach to reintroducing mystery by hinting that there's a lot more and then kind of revealing stuff actually just tells you more about him. It says there's more to know, and by the way, here it is. You know, you don't actually... In the current, most recent series, you're not actually introducing more mystery about him by having people going around going, "Doctor Who?" If you start suggesting you're going to answer that question, you're actually reducing the mystery. You're not increasing it.
I think that's where, you know, they didn't make Long Barrow in season 26 for the very specific reason that Andrew Cartmell wanted more mystery. He didn't want to set up a big mystery and then answer it.
Yeah. The one other thing we noticed in part three is there's a this is something you just look out for if you're ever watching it again, which you should because it's fun, there's a shot where it's really badly focused and the Doctor starts pressing, I think with his umbrella, into some of the controls in the Nemesis craft, and you can't even see what he's doing because it's off the side, and it's almost as if the whole picture's been zoomed in, as if they've recognised there's something in shot that shouldn't be, and there's just this one blurry shot, and between that and the shot of the arrow stuck in the TARDIS door, which appears to be a still, as if they've gone, "Oh, Richard grabbed that arrow and there's no explanation, quick, insert a still from somewhere explaining where it's come from." In those final scenes in the warehouse, there's just a couple of odd shots. Plus, every time someone arrives to talk to them in the warehouse, they walk into shot from a metre away.
Yeah, so
despite the fact they should have
seen them walking
all the way across
the door. You know, about 30 metres away. It's like they only notice them when they're standing right next to them. But I think in Doctor Who there's a long history of people not noticing things unless they're directly in front of their faces. Yes.
Well, it's in episode one, even, you have Painfort and Richard just standing around near the police, and after about 5 minutes go, anyway, we should hide so the police don't see us.
Yeah. It's obviously an homage to, like, when the Daleks go straight past Barbara in the Dalek Invasion of Earth and don't see her.
But it's good fun, and it's... And I think, Fiona Walker's really good as Painfort. Actually, Gerard Murphy's good as Richard as well.
Yeah.
And McCoy and Aldred are having a ball, and yeah. I think are very watchable. So that was Silver Nemesis. That was our season 25. And that means it's just about time to ask the randomizer to pick us another year. We are three down. That means we've got 32 to go. So, well... We ride to destiny.
We surely do, honey. We surely do.
We didn't plan that. Didn't plan that at all. Okay, the randomizer is on, and we're almost ready to find out which year we'll be going to next. A reminder that we treat there as being 35 active years of Doctor Who, the original 26 seasons, the McGann year, and then in the new series, 4 years... the specials, and then 3 Matt Smith years. So that adds up to 35. And I am ready to press the button and ask the randomizer to select us.
Can I press the button this week?
I'll allow this.
Which okay. Button is it?
Oh, if you don't... How many buttons does the randomizer have?
It's got ones all the way down each side.
I know, so none of them are labelled, are they? And yet only one actually does anything. I mean, it's this button here that you need to press, so don't press it yet.
Okay.
Get ready.
I'm ready.
3.
Always.
2, 1. Well, we were discussing what kind of time period we'd like to go for, and to be honest, because we've done a 6th Doctor, a 7th Doctor, and an 11th Doctor,
yeah.
We've pretty much done any of the others.
Yeah.
We have got the 3rd Doctor.
Oh.
And we have got season 9.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Not quite an anniversary season.
Well, the 9th anniversary season. So. this is where.
That was a very fatuous comment. We'll strike that from the record.
This is where Derek Folds would say, well, actually, Prime Minister, if it's the 9th season following the 1st season, then actually it's the 8th anniversary.
You'd get a withering glance from both Sir Humphrey and the Prime Minister.
So we are in season 9, so off the top of my head, that means our choices, and there's a couple more, or one or two more to choose from this time, I think there are probably 5 stories.
There's 5 stories, yeah.
So our choices are, off the top of my head, in broadcast order, Day of the Daleks, The Curse of Peladon, The Sea Devils, The Mutants, and The Time Monster. I'll just shut the randomizer down.
Okay, thank you, randomizer.
So, Day of the Daleks is 4 episodes, as is Curse of Peladon. How long's the Sea Devils?
6 episodes.
That's 6. And the Mutants is 6, and the Time Monster is 6. So that's not a factor, but it's worth knowing. What's your immediate instinct? And remember, we have no real criteria, but we do want to kind of be representative of the season. I'm not saying that means that we have to have the Master in it. He's only in 2.
Yeah. So, I think... It's a funny old season, this season 9, because it's the first Pertwee season that's not really majorly unit-focused. They're only in the first and last stories, and then you've got the 3 in the middle, where they don't appear at all. So, if we wanted to go for something representative of the era, you're probably looking at Day of the Daleks or the Time Monster. And the Time Monster is the most obviously representative because it's unit, it's the Master, it's that kind of 70s mysticism.
But we're saying it doesn't need to be representative of the unit era, it only needs to be representative of season 9.
Yeah, and I guess season 9 is quite a weird Pertwee season because all of the stories are quite different from the last one. So you've got The Curse of Peladon, which I think I'm right in saying the 2 Peladon stories are the only Pertwee stories that are entirely studio-bound. Every other Pertwee story's got loads of location filming. Uh-huh. So the Curse of Peladon's a really weird, gothic, claustrophobic type story, and it feels quite different from most of the Pertwee stories, I think, as a result of that. You've got Day of the Daleks, which is obviously reintroducing the Daleks after, 5 years?
We were mentioning it just now when we were watching Silver Nemesis as another story which has multiple time zones in.
really, really strong story, I think, and a really powerful. Barry Letts and Terrence Dix always like their season openers. They always like to do something different and attention-grabbing with their season opener, and how much more attention-grabbing than bringing back the Daleks after years and years away. I think you've got The Mutants, which, for all that it has its flaws, I think Bob Baker and Dave Martin always bring a kind of off-the-wall madness to every episode that they write, and I really like a lot of The Mutants. The Sea Devils is probably, for me, the most unrewarding, just because it's kind of like a slightly worse remake of The Silurians, and the only thing that enlivens it for me particularly is that the Master's in it.
I'm thinking about which ones I would go for. I although I don't really mind it, I'm not tempted to watch The Mutants. It's the only one I think I definitely not. Day of the Daleks I haven't seen for quite a long time, and it is an interesting story, and I would quite like to revisit that time travel element. The Sea Devils I remember seeing when it was repeated in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember.
And I'd quite like to watch it for Donald Sumpter. But I don't think that's enough reason to sit through six episodes of it. I mean, Kirk Trenchard's fun, and the Master and his
clangers,
but I've seen that so many times. Curse of Peladon I know much better than Monster of Peladon, and I'm slightly tempted by.
Do you know, the one that I'm really tempted by is the one that you haven't mentioned yet, because I have watched The Time Monster more than once, but I've never actively watched it, if you know what I mean. It's one of those Pertwees where I've put it on, and because it's been six episodes and I've tried to watch it in one go, kind of halfway through the second episode I've lost interest a bit, or I've started getting distracted by something else, and it's been on all the way through, but I've never properly committed to it. So this might be a great opportunity for me to actively watch it and think about things that I want to say about it.
I was thinking it's one I don't remember very well. And then I start to think about it and suddenly go, oh, it's got the nappy and the strange device thing that just looks rubbish with the forks in. And but on the other hand, it's is Ingrid Pitt in it?
It's got one of my favourite bits in the Pertwee era. What prey is Tom Tit? What prey is interstitial time? It's got the Master being interrogated by the Vice-Chancellor of the University to justify his funding. Which always amuses me.
Professor Thescalis, at some point this poet would go, oh, Joe, don't you know you're ancient Greek?
I think he does, actually.
I want the episode where he's like, oh, Joe, don't you know you're Yiddish?
Tom Tit. It's worth watching it just for that.
It's starting to come back to me, actually, more than The Mutants. I'm tempted by Day of the Daleks.
See, I've watched Day of the Daleks quite recently and quite active. I'm very familiar with it. I'm not averse.
It's got a shiny-faced...
It's one of Pertwee's best performances.
The listeners may not know, but is it the Controller? Is that what he's called?
He is, yeah.
He actually had a tragic condition of a shiny face.
Yeah.
And consequently could only appear in sci-fi shows when he was able to be cast with shiny faces. So he's in Day of the Daleks. He's also in the Blake 7 episode Gambit. That's just his real face in Gambit as well. It's quite a tragic story.
He's half Mavellan on his mother's side, I think.
Oh, that would explain it. But yeah, it's he started getting mistaken for Gary Glitter. It was. I think not the Sea Devils, seen that loads.
Yeah.
Not the Mutants, because you know it's the Mutants.
Uh-huh.
Well, what's the thing that his continuity guide says? Jeffrey Palmer's the best thing in it, and he dies in the first episode.
I think that's very unfair.
It is, but it's odd that sticks in the mind more than any of the actual bits of the story. I know there's a bald man in it and some light.
Don't they have some caves? Bob Baker and Dave Martin have that obsession with phonetic English, and they've got signs. I think they do it in The Invisible Enemy as well, or maybe I'm just conflating the two, but it has got a character called Kai or KY, which
yes,
is endlessly amusing.
Well, it's amusing.
And is it Paul Whitson-Jones or something like that plays the Marshal?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
I mean, I quite like his performance. Nice cave filming as well.
I think it is going to be the Time Monster. I think it's a story we've neglected a little bit over the years. And it has a bad reputation, those last two stories do. And we'll see whether or not it's a worthy bad reputation. It's got the Master in... but it's also not, and it's got units in, so it is representative of the era, but it's not stuck on 20th century Earth. It has a whole other element to it. So I think, yeah, let's go for the Time Monster.
Well, it's kind of it's a little bit end of an era, isn't it? Because your next actual Pertwee is the Three Doctors, and he gets his TARDIS back.
Are you doing the Roger Delgado?
So, it's kind of like the last gasp of the old Earth-based format, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, thanks to the production code, we at least know we'll sit watching it going, ooh! if you don't understand that joke, you're very, very lucky. Right then, let's note that down, and over the next week, we will watch The Time Monster, and we will come back to you, tell you how it was, and ask the randomizer to pick us yet another year to continue our quest to taste each season of Doctor Who. Bye-bye!
Bye!